Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its author's intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special two-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
I pressed the until it was flush against Sydney's throat. Is it too tight? I asked. His breath stuttered slightly, and when he cast his eyes down, they were glinting. It's perfect, he said.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Bim.
How are you today?
Alive. I'm good. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Marvelous. Marvelous.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm in a similar boat, I think. I am afloat. I'm on the right side of the earth. I think we're doing A-OK.
Yeah. Yeah. So that redacted mentions the name Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And that name is referring to a Mr. Sydney Chambers.
Yes.
From the show Grantchester.
Yes. Fully fictional.
Fully fictional.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the actor who plays him,
nope.
Which is James Norton.
Yes, we're talking about Sydney Chambers, who is from actually originally a book character. He's a literary figure from a series of crime fiction books by the British author James Runcie. So it came to TV a few years ago. And they cast it. I mean, honestly, half the battle was in the casting.
Right.
And they went right to Rada and they plucked out a vicar-looking motherfucker. And yeah, he's a very hot vicar who solves crimes, a.k.a. dream dude.
Yeah, yeah. But we're also going to talk about someone that we have been getting a lot of requests for in the last few months, even before we were back on the air, before everybody knew we were coming back. People were just, can you please talk about this person? And that is Hot Priest.
Yep.
From Fleabag.
Mm-hmm. The curious thing is, Nicole, his actual character name is The Priest.
Right.
But I love how the fandom has given him another name. Screw whatever Phoebe was thinking about The Priest. We all know you meant Hot Priest, Phoebe.
Right.
And that's what we're going to call him. Calling him everything but a child of God. He is a hot priest. God bless you. And he's played by Andrew Scott.
Yes, of Sherlock Holmes, Moriarty fame.
Yep.
He's also about to star in an upcoming series based on the talented Mr. Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be exciting to watch. I think he's perfect for that.
He's perfect for a lot of things. He's very impish looking.
Yeah.
Which is why Hot Priest was so hot.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, his face looks like it's up to no good and you want to be engaged in that.
Yes.
So I get it. I get it. Like I went in and I was like, all right, fine. Let's see this hot priest you're all losing your minds about. And then I saw it and I was like, oh no, that's a hot priest, fam. Like, yeah, that's a priest as hot. Like I went in there and I confirmed it with scientific study and I was like, no, guys, you're right. He's a hot priest. Yeah. Good job. As hot as a bag of flaming hot Cheetos, perhaps even hotter. Really did say, he did exactly what it said on the tin. So shout out to you, Andrew Scott. Yes.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about people of the cloth and why they sometimes get us going under the collar, so to speak.
Hey. Yes, that's right. It's our very first themed episode.
Yes.
Of our return. We're not going to be talking about one person. We're talking about a phenomenon and then the people within that phenomenon. Mm-hmm, we're talking, as Nicole said, people of the cloth who makes us want to take off our own clothes. That's a very tortured, convoluted.
It works.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks. You are the wind beneath my smutty wings. So our saga begins in a sleepy Cambridgeshire town called Grantchester.
Yes. And, you know, I love a sleepy village rife with murder. It is my favorite type of TV show. I love a cozy mystery. I love, an unusual partnership. Mm-hmm. So in this case, we have a sexy vicar.
Yep.
And an inspector.
Yes, he was very grizzled. He's called Geordie. Mm-hmm. And he's played, and this is me speaking to my fellow Brits who grew up with Robson Green back when he had a full head of hair. Oh my God. Robson was an integral part of me becoming a woman.
Uh-oh.
He was so beautiful when he was younger. I mean, he still is. But when he was younger, he was on a TV show called Soldier Soldier. Mm-hmm. Like I said, back then he had hair and he had very twinkly eyes. His eyes remain twinkly.
Yeah.
The hair is less present.
Right.
But he was on there with Jerome Flynn, which many people now know from Game of Thrones. But they were so successful. They were such housewives' favorites, as we call them in the UK. They even went on to become a musical duo. They performed songs. Yeah, they had number ones. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm talking to the Brits here. The OGs know.
Okay, okay.
Like, America's kind of like, Geordie, he's cute. And I was like, excuse you, that is Mr. Robson Green. How dare you? He's beautiful. He has this really lovely accent because he's from the north of England. Specifically, he's a Geordie. And it just sounds really, you know, it makes me feel oddly comforted, even though I don't know anyone who's Geordie. But it's a nice sound. And so you have his kind of grizzled, kind of like, I've seen it all cop guy.
Yeah.
And then you have like the soft optimism, but also dealing with his own demons, vicar.
Right, yeah.
And together, sexy magic.
But we're talking about Sidney Chambers, he is, I like his face. He does have a square jaw, square head, and I want to punch it, but like in a sexy way.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, he is, you know, he's the thing that Nicole and I kind of talk a lot about resisting as the epitome of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
He is blonde. He is kind of light-eyed, and he is a white man. So you're kind of like, oh, I guess. But then annoyingly, for God's sake, he actually is handsome. And it's not just because he has this amazing mouth.
Yes.
His lips in particular are doing a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of the beauty of his face.
Yes.
The bottom lip in particular is very full. And I mean that in terms of, yes, for a white guy, but still generally quite full. And when he kind of smiles, it suddenly becomes quite wide. And all you can think is, what fits in there?
Yeah, he is unusual because, you know, he drinks a lot.
Yes.
He smokes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He listens to jazz, because again, this is in the 1950s. This takes place in the 1950s.
Right.
And he has casual sex. This is someone that is outside of your normal expectations of what a man of cloth should be or what a clergyman should be.
What I will say also is that I know that lots of people don't necessarily, in terms of the American audience, are kind of like, so what is a vicar? Because I think in many people's minds, people who take on, who, you know, answer the call, as it were, tend not to have relations with with, you know, love, you know, lovers or whatever. Like, it's kind of like a renouncing. But of course, Sidney is a vicar in the Anglican tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he can get married and, you know, I love the Church of England, man. It's just so complex and ridiculous. Shout out to you, Henry VIII. So, yeah, he does do all these things where he is sort of in the world
in a way that is, yes, he prepares a sermon and he has a flock and so on and so forth. But generally speaking, he gets to occupy a space in this earthly world. And in Sydney's case, like Nicole has mentioned, that means a good amount of jazz. Mm-hmm. So there are all these layers to him that suggest, yes, Britain was what it was at that time. But here is one singular guy in Cambridge who, you know, he came back from war. Yes, he was a little bit damaged by what happened out there, but it also made him more amenable to jazz and sex with black women. So, you know, is everything bad?
So he knows that there's a problem with his drinking, but when he's drinking, that mouth. So his mouth is kind of small. It's not wide. So
that's only when he smiles.
But when he's also when he's drinking and he tosses it back, he tosses the scotch back and his mouth opens up so wide. I am just like, oh, hello.
And then your tonsils?
And then you see like his throat working as he swallows.
That's the thing.
It's just like,
that's the stuff. It's the throat that gets me. The mouth is fine. It's good. It's great. But when you see, like, you know, I'm like, shout out to your esophagus. It's doing, it's putting in some work to get that booze even faster to numb your feelings. Good job, good job.
Yeah. Like, all these women fall at his feet.
Yes.
I mean, of all ages, from the teenage girls that, you know, in the church that he's giving Bible study lessons to or whatever.
Yeah. And that's not a euphemism.
No.
That's literally, yeah. He's a responsible vicar.
Right. To the elderly women and to the women who are, you know, past the first blush of youth.
Right.
And, you know, they're trying to figure out, am I still sexy? Or can I still use my feminine wiles? And they come to Sydney, man, and they...
Listen, I know that if I was a congregant, I would attempt something. I know I would, because he cuts quite a dashing figure when he puts on the vestments and he's out there, like, about to preach the word of God. And every time I think to myself, I'm obviously here for that, but also I'm not here for that at all, Sydney.
Look, episode 2 opens where he is scything in the cemetery.
Fuck's sake.
And he is wearing, you know, a tank shirt, a shirt and suspenders, you know, whatever.
We call them braces in the UK, guys.
So he is sleeveless and you can see that this man is cut.
He's the bounty of the Lord.
Yes.
Wow.
And he is out there sweaty. His hair is all wet and floppy.
Yep.
I'm like, dang, that's episode 2.
That's episode 2. They said, we're going to keep the audience we got last week, bitches. And they held us. When I saw that scene, I remember feeling like I was being held at the throat. And a part of me was kind of like, oh, come on. And another part of me was kind of like, come on. Like, you know, like, I get that. And whoever wrote that script was kind of like, you could just imagine them kind of going, all right, so James, what's going to happen is you're going to be clothed, but it's going to be like you're not clothed. All right, just go with me here. Like, and he, bless his heart, he leans into it. He's, you know,
man,
he's doing the work.
The second season opens with him and Jordy jumping into a swimming hole. Mm.
a what?
A swimming hole.
Sure.
And he has on these little plaid trunks of the time.
Yeah.
These swimming shorts. Beautiful.
Oh, that pause was so pregnant. You were just like, beautiful.
Because it looks so good. It's so perfect on his body. Mm. You know, regardless of what time period they're supposed to be of, it looks really good on his frame.
Yeah.
And
it's a nice frame.
Yeah. And it's like,
he kills it.
I do want to play a clip that shows Sydney with a jazz singer, a young black woman who, you know, maybe some things happened between them. I don't know. But I want to give an example of the way women just kind of fall at his feet.
Okay, I'm in.
My friend, the detective.
I'm not a detective. I'm a vicar.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a kind face you got.
Not a threat to anyone.
I don't know about that. Drinking to forget.
Gloria, always. You want?
Mine's a bourbon. No ice. I like forgetting too.
It is a lot.
Yeah, I want to forget with Sydney Chambers too.
Listen, I don't even need a memory. What for? He's someone who I think is so aware of his mortality. Having seen so much of it, I think he's seen so much destruction, so much death, so much carnage, and he has survived. And I think a big part of, you know, the things that drive him, the demons that drive him, a good deal of that is, you know, survivor's guilt. He's someone who has returned where so many others did not.
Right.
And so he feels, and that explains also like this need, this the pining he does, but he never fully steps into the thing that he wants. Mm-hmm. I think he's constantly scared of wanting too much. And every so often he allows himself to, for example, when he's taking in some liquor. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he does drink too much. And he does, you know, he overindulges in this thing. Mm-hmm. But it ties him, it holds him back in so many other places. And I think that's the thing that he's constantly battling against. And it's, like I said, it's this idea of finding a happy place between, you know, the kingdom of God that he's allegedly called to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the very present earth that he is a part of right now. Mm-hmm. He's trying to figure out life on this side of the equation, you know? And I think that's the thing that is most interesting. He's an interesting figure doing interesting things. And that's the most compelling part of him. Beyond his obvious beauty, right, is like a human being struggling to kind of come to terms with various decisions, some of them of his own making, others not, and trying to kind of muddle through it. And it just so happens that he also gets to do that while solving murders.
Right. And I think another reason why the women in the village fall for him or are so attracted to him beyond his beauty is the fact that maybe because he is a vicar, he sees all of them in a way that they are not used to. So you have the secretaries who are used to being invisible. You have the sex workers who are used to being invisible until there's a need for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the men around them are just walking by them or whatever, but he knows their names. He remembers their names. He remembers the little things like, you know, this one sex worker was like, I remember I used to read The Secret Garden when I was a little girl. I can read. I'm, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he brings her a copy of The Secret Garden.
Yeah.
Towards the end of that particular episode. So things like that.
Yeah, it's the line of care. He sees them.
Yes.
And I think, again, if you're going to kind of figure out, I suppose, if you're going to figure out who to put your, who to project your wants, your needs onto, it would be a man who sees you.
Right.
That's like the very basic requirement. And it's actually also a very smooth segue into our next man of the cloth, because his trick seems to be that he sees our heroine.
Yes. And that is Hot Priest.
Shout out to you. Shout out to you.
From Fleabag. He sees her in the way that no one else does. And when I say that he sees her, he sees us, the viewer that she speaks to all the time. He's like, what are you doing? Where are you disappearing? Why are you, you know, he doesn't say, why are you talking to someone else? But he's like, who are you talking to? Where do you go? You disappear. Right. So.
And that sometimes I think, sometimes when people are talking about desire, a lot of the time what they're also referencing is a sort of need or a desire to be enveloped in the gaze of someone, that for someone to see every part of you and to not flinch from it.
Yes.
And I think the genius of Hot Priest, besides, we'll go into it, but one of the biggest things for me was that he, like you said, he saw her. He sees her. He sees other people seeing her. He's so finely attuned to her.
Yes.
That even if he wasn't Hot Priest, like, I'd be like, Jesus Christ, who the fuck wrote this love? Like, it's a love story.
It is.
It's somebody seeing you the way you want to be seen in your totality. You want to be seen front and back, sideways. You want someone to look at you and recognize you from the back, you know, recognize you from behind, recognize you from the skin of your arm. Someone to look at you. And when Hot Priest, because again, we don't have a name, he's called the priest, but, you know, we've called him Hot Priest, so we'll just lean into that. There's something about the way he so totally sees her, and that she, you can see her, she's like a cat in a sunbeam. She's kind of rolling over to be seen.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. But let's start from the beginning. So Fleabag is the Amazon Prime / BBC production from Phoebe Waller-Bridge about this woman who is going through life. that's the only way to describe it. And the Hot Priest doesn't appear until the second season.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second season, he appears at the dinner scene at the very beginning of season two.
where it's announced that he will be holding the wedding of Fleabag, that's Phoebe's character, her father and her soon-to-be stepmother, the godmother. They're getting together and they're going to get married, and he's going to be doing the ceremony.
Yeah, and you know, the dinner is the first time that Fleabag has been with all the family since the first season. It's been over a year. At this dinner, everything's tense and weird and strange, and the priest is sitting next to Fleabag, and he just keeps looking her dead in her eyes. Everyone else is just kind of ignoring her or waiting for her to fuck up or do something terrible. Mm. But when he looks at her, he smiles at her. And it's a smile like, again, that kind of, we share a secret together. Like, mm-hmm. And it's so sweet. And she, you know, she looks at us like, do you see what I'm seeing? Yeah. You know? And it's just, regardless of how you feel about Andrew Scott's looks, mm-hmm. it really doesn't matter, because it is about this feeling of an adult crush. What that moment of seeing somebody recognize you and that you're both trying to figure out the dance together. How right. do we, you know, are we, what kind of dance are we about to do?
What are my steps, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's just really, that's what makes him hot.
Yes. Yes, it's not so much about his physicality. It's not so much about his acting is superb.
Of
the
course,
writing
yes.
is stunning. I honestly do think it is. I finished watching season two and I thought, oh, that's a masterpiece. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge is a genius. And I don't bandy genius. I definitely don't ever call men geniuses. That's enough. But even then, I'm very kind of, you know, stingy with it, because I think, it's good. Whatever. Mm-hmm. This, I remember kind of like closing the tab on my laptop and I was like, Jesus Christ, like, who the fuck? Like, yeah. Why didn't I write this? This is amazing. And so on. And I think that writing is evident in every single frame, because she has given these actors amazing lines and they are doing amazing work. But fundamentally, what she's writing is a thing that we're all universally craving, I think. And that is, like you said, that moment, she understands human relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So when she puts Hot Priest next to Fleabag, for the longest time, they don't interact. And then they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic lies in her timing, mm-hmm. of the point at which he sees her, or the point at which she reveals to us, the viewers, that he sees her, is that secret smile.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a moment that even Fleabag kind of double takes, like, what
yeah.
was that?
Yeah.
Which doesn't feel alien. In the real world, there are times when you make eye contact with someone or you feel a connection and you're kind of like, what am I, like you said, like, what are my steps here? What is this, a tango? Is it like
yeah.
a Charleston? What's going on?
Yeah.
And that moment of like sexy confusion is yes. incredibly hot. And Phoebe writes it and the actors just give it to you. And I think that immediately that happened, I sat up at home and I was like, wait.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen. I know he's a priest. I know he's marrying her parents in the morning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like something is going
to
happen.
It has to happen, because
right.
the chemistry was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It was just floating from whatever screen you're looking at this on.
Yeah.
It was just fiery, just sparks everywhere.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason that he was, you know, he would start to look really rough towards the middle part was him fighting his feelings
for
Fleabag and not, you know, again, that temptation, whatever. And so I think the overall thing, again, with, you know, the attraction to people of the cloth is this idea of forbidden fruit. And then also, you're so powerful, like whoever you are, to tempt a
right.
person of God,
right?
Whatever your religion may be, that you can make someone question themselves.
Right.
And for Fleabag, who has felt kind of out of control
yes.
with the choices that she's made,
mm-hmm.
and she needs someone with authority in her life, because the people who are supposed to be authority figures in her life have not necessarily abandoned her, but she has to carry them, like her father and her
mm-hmm.
sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has to, you know, cover for her sister with different things,
mm-hmm.
So that her sister can look good,
mm-hmm.
be the one that comes out on top of whatever, whether it's a presentation at her job or because of some weird thing that happened between her and her husband. And the sister's name is Claire. I'm sorry. So Claire, her sister, she covers for her a lot. Her father is this kind of mumbling, confused man. I don't know, yeah. like, what, you know, his character.
He's a little broken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, their mother had passed, and maybe, you know, he's just kind of like, I know I need someone. So here is this godmother who was clear about how she was going to, you know, worm her way into his life from right. the moment of the funeral. So anyway, I think I remember someone on Twitter said that Fleabag has become the sin eater of the family. Mm-hmm. And she takes on all of their pain just to make it easier for them to move on. And then, you know, they can put all of their issues onto her and blame her for everything. Blame her for ruining the dinner party. Blame her for whatever, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so Fleabag needs someone to make decisions for her. So that they can take the blame of what she's doing, and whether that is going to be God and his divine plan or the priest that represents God mm-hmm. on earth. She is looking for something. And then here's this man who sees her.
Mm-hmm. And that's the question that she kind of takes with her to therapy where, you know, and the therapist asks a, you know, singularly profane question. But it's an important question, kind of like this thing that you're pursuing. Is it as innocent as you claim it is? Or do you have a kind of deeper purpose here? Like, is it the priest you're trying to get with, or are you trying to get back at God in some capacity? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a valid question, because I do think when things are spiraling, and like Nicole said, I think, you know, she's a little bit unmoored. She's lost her best friend. She's been cut off from her family in a very big way. She's feeling a little bit lost. And then in comes someone who has, you know, more than most of us, a claim to some sort of divine knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very handy way for you to, like, even if you don't want to kind of give over all your kind of, you know, decision-making ability, you want someone who claims to have the answers in your corner.
Mm-hmm.
So her attraction to the priest on the one hand is completely normal, where you're just seeking someone to kind of, you know, go through life with. But then at the core of it also is this person who's kind of like, my God, can you just tell me what to do?
Yes.
And that segues very neatly.
Yes. Because, you know, at one point she's like, I need someone to tell me what to wear in the morning, you know, what to do. You know, she lists all these things that she wants. And so he takes her to the confessional so that she can confess, you know, her sins to him. And she's just like, I don't know what to do. Just tell me what to do. And he tells her, kneel.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find that moment as hot as many people did.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Catholic school, you know, in a very unsexy way. We did Stations of the Cross every Friday. I do not have fond memories. I did not ever look at a priest and kind of think, ooh, yeah. It was like, no thanks, get me out of here as soon as possible. So I don't have a very strong feeling of, ooh, forbidden authority figure. But in the moment, I watched it. I didn't find it hot, but I understood it. I understood those who did find it hot. The music kind of swells in the background, and
right,
at home, you're just kind of like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah.
And is it hot in here? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a very effective moment. But the overarching thing about him, like, you know, we keep saying, the earthiness of him.
Mm-hmm.
He is someone who is as tortured as Sydney Chambers is in terms of, because in as much as we talk about Fleabag and her feeling on Maud and whatnot, I think he was feeling similarly on Maud.
Yes, there is. He talks about this fox that foxes keep following him. They're out to get him and all this kind of stuff. And I think the fox symbolizes his conflicts with his sexuality, with his earthiness and things like that.
The fox appears when he's feeling most conflicted.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
He's always seeing that. He's always kind of, it's like the monkey on his back, to borrow another animal. Sorry, monkey. But like that feeling of someone being constantly watched, like he's aware that he's on the edge of transgression.
Mm-hmm.
He's so aware of it. So he's holding himself extra tight
mm-hmm.
as well. And it kind of matches in energy Fleabag's situation.
Right.
Where they're both looking for something and they crash into one another and kind of have that moment of, wait, is it you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you the thing that I've been waiting for? Could it be? And they're similarly confused and then heartbreaking. One of them is no longer confused, but another one still is.
Mm.
And that's where the grandest conflict of all occurs. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, you know, Hot Priest stays a Hot Priest.
Yeah.
But it's a moment where he has to, finally the fox disappears, at least for now.
because he comes to a decision, and it's not without heart-wrenching, you know, consequences, because it turns out Fleabag has stopped questioning. She'd found it.
Yeah.
And then it didn't match. And I think, again, not that pining is hot.
Yes, I love longing. I mean, just they do it so well in season two of Fleabag. The longing between them, this I want you, but I can't have you kind of thing. And even when they do go there, there's still this moment of what's next.
Yeah.
And when he says, she says, I love you. They sit for a second and he says, it'll pass. That is, my heart just broke for her.
He looks as though it hurts him as much as it's hurting her to say it. Yeah. And he makes a definitive step to end it. And in so doing, he's breaking her heart. But you have no doubt that he's breaking his own heart. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly powerful. It's also incredibly hot. Because after that, I was kind of like, well, I guess it's time to fall in love with a fucking priest. I guess. Because you think to yourself, will I ever feel these feelings? Will I ever... You know, will I ever get to the point where I look at someone and say, that's my person? Because that's exactly what Fleabag is doing. Mm-hmm. She chooses him, and then he chooses elsewhere.
Yes.
And it's not without pain, but he chooses God. And that, again, boils down this feeling of kind of like, you know, I imagine, like you said, the feeling of somebody connecting to some alleged higher power.
Yeah.
You want to plug into that. And I do think that's part of the allure of, you know, clergy people. Is this idea that they must have something figured out.
Yeah, so there is a book by James Baldwin called Go Tell It on the Mountain. Mm. And there is a scene where someone gets the Holy Spirit, as we say, and they are in this ecstatic moment. And that ecstasy is so similar to sexual ecstasy.
Right.
That it, you know, and the description of it is fantastic. And so I think that is what we see here between Hot Priest and Fleabag, because there's a moment, and I think we have a clip for this, where he's like, I feel something and I don't know what it is.
Yes.
Oh my God. You have lipstick all over.
Oh, fucking hell. That would not look good. Is it gone? Where? Oh, fucking hell. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, I don't know what this feeling is.
Is it God or is it me?
I don't know.
Man. And that scene kind of extends. He kind of, that thing that you said about him walking away, he kind of, as he kind of turns the corner, he stops to look at her and he throws his head back. And it's almost kind of like disbelieving.
Yes.
Like he's looking at her like, what are you? What have you done to me?
Yes. You know, I think that she has crush goggles on when she's looking at him, because there's this one moment where they're walking. He's taking her someplace and she's looking at him. She's like, oh, his arms.
Yes. I think we have a clip of that, too.
Really
pleased with that. Yeah. Once it's nipped in.
Oh, it'll be perfect. His arms.
Do you prefer weddings or funerals?
Weddings. His arms.
I think there's something humbling about funerals.
Really?
Yeah, it's good to dwell on the next life.
You really think there's a next life?
What do you believe? Worm food.
Why?
Why what? His neck.
Why would you believe in something awful when you can believe in something wonderful?
Don't make me an optimist. You will ruin my life.
I love the way she interjects, because that's how it feels.
Yeah.
When you are noticing things about people, you start interjecting at the worst possible. You know, talking about funerals and whatever. She's like, his neck. Like,
yes.
I love the way, and when she says it, she looks like plaintively at the camera, like, are you guys seeing what I'm seeing? Look at his arms. And to be fair, he's wearing in that scene this kind of French Terry sweatshirt. That is, of course, the second hottest garment a man can wear.
Mm-hmm. After the Henley.
After the Henley, thank you. And he's wearing it like in this blue, and it really works with like his dark hair and his pale skin. It's all working for him.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you believe it. You imagine he looks like a snack. Like he's walking alongside her and he's got his sleeves pushed up, which shout out to forearms. Like he's just doing, he looks like, yes, admiring the bounty of God. And you're like, Jesus.
Yes.
Like my Twitter was a wash, and I use that word very pointedly, a wash with feelings about Hot Priest. People were just losing their goddamn minds.
Yes.
And I think, again, it wasn't so much like he's like the epitome of what we've been told is male beauty, But there was something about the collectivism of that moment, all of us looking at something and understanding fundamentally that it's less about what he looks like, it's whatever, it's the energy, it's the thing he produces in Fleabag. That's the thing that we are, on some level, I think a lot of us are kind of, you know, either we've experienced or we want to experience. And there was something about all of us watching it at the same time and kind of thinking, oh, she's named it. She has named the animal that we have seen in our lives for so long and we never knew what it was called.
Yes. And it's also just wherever you are in your relationship status, whether you're single or you're married or partnered or whatever, seeing that, seeing it play out on the screen, you're just kind of like, oh, I remember that. Right. I remember that feeling.
Yeah. And by extension, we're in there with her and we're remembering or we're yearning or we're doing whatever. It's really masterful television and she's doing amazing. Anyway, it's great.
It's a great show. Hot Priest is hot. Again, you know, it's more about the energy and the feel of him. And that's as equally as important as looks or anything else.
What a time to be alive. We're gonna have a couple of things where we just kind of mention some other memorable people of the cloth.
Right.
And then we're gonna just sit on that. We're gonna think about that. We're gonna take you to the Lord in prayer.
So we're gonna do some honorable mentions because obviously we can't talk about every hot clergy person.
I mean, we could, but we'd be here for 7 years.
Right. And so I want to briefly mention The Thornbirds, which was a miniseries back in the 80s that if you try to watch it now, you're going to cringe because it is so terrible. But it is about a priest who falls in love with someone we're introduced to as a young girl.
Already problematic.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like he's grooming her. But anyway, we're not necessarily saying that it's a beautiful story, but it is kind of this. I don't want to say it's the start, but it's a
formative experience for many people who saw it. And, you know, people who read the book as well. The Thornbirds is based on a book by Colleen McCullough. And then it was turned into a miniseries in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I think I was a newly born child when it was on.
I mean, I was very young when it came on, but I remember that it caused such a sensation in pop culture when it was on. So The Thornbirds, I'm sure you can find that someplace.
Oh yeah. And what's interesting also is kind of like, it's such a clear line of a generational divide.
Yes.
Like some people remember The Thornbirds freeze and others have like a vague inkling and some people don't even like Thorn what?
Yeah.
If you remember, you remember. If you were there, you were there. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. One of my favorites, there's also my friend's favorite, is Sunset Beach. Mm. I don't know how many of you watched this terrible soap from the 90s. It's an American soap opera. And there was a very, very handsome priest. He was Father Antonio. I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous. He was kind of like comically beautiful. Mm-hmm. He had like dark hair. He was Italian or Spanish or something. I don't know. One of the duskier whites. And he and he had like, you know, dark hair and these soulful brown eyes. And he always looked like he was like tortured and was in constant conversation with God and everything was just terrible. He was trying to kind of fight against the fear. It was a lot. And for like a young girl mm-hmm. who was like, you know, trying to figure out what in the world she liked, he was a very important part. So shout out to you, Father Antonio, wherever the fuck you are. God bless you. You were very important for a good number of British schoolgirls.
We talked about this in our episode about Gael Garcia Bernal, but the crime of Father Amaro.
You should check. That's a hot priest.
Yeah, if you didn't get a chance to watch it back then, watch it now.
Definitely. go find you a little source.
And there is a show on the Oprah Winfrey Network called Greenleaf that is about a Southern Black mega church and all the scandals that come along with that. And there is a prodigal daughter, her name is Grace, goes by Gigi. She comes back and, you know, she's fighting the calling and she is very much trying to figure out who she should be with and all this kind of stuff. So there's just a lot going on with that. I recommend that if you're not able to watch it on own. It's currently on Netflix, so give that a shot.
Lean in. And speaking of female clergy, I wouldn't feel right about not mentioning Geraldine, aka the Vicar of Dibley, who was incredibly important to me as a comedy fan as a kid and as a teenager in the UK. It's played by Dawn French, the amazing iconic comedian Dawn French. And it's great. I really love that show. And she was like this, you know, Dawn French at the time was a little bit bigger than she is now. But she was like this incredibly sensuous, this very kind of like earthbound, you know, she was clearly, she spoke a lot about fancying dudes. And she was like almost aggressively kind of like, yeah, I'm trying to get me married. And like, you know, she was a pleasure loving vicar. And I remember watching that and thinking, this feels important. I'm not even a Christian, but it felt important to me to see that. And she was this incredibly warm, loving. She loved her congregation, loved her community. And she also, by the end of it, which shout out to everybody involved, she ended up falling in love and getting married at the end of it. And her husband that was played by Richard Armitage. So Dawn French said, get me fucking Richard Armitage. We're going to make it work. And at the end of it, you're rooting for them so hard. You're like, you know what? I hope they do make it. I hope they have 5 kids and everything is great. Bless the Church of England. Everything's great.
So, yeah, hot clergy people.
Shout out to you. You're keeping the fires of heaven burning.
All right. Well, we had some delicious, sinful fun.
what the hell was that sound effect?
Talking about the vicar, sexy vicar, Sydney Chambers from Grantchester, and hot priest from Fleabag.
Yes.
Now it's time for our own contribution to the genre of sexy clergymen.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Canon is bursting. You know, in many ways, arguably, we don't need to do this. You already know what a hot priest means. This is a nod to Geraldine, who, you know, had a very gentle, her fantasy life was rich, but it was also very gentle. And so that's where I'm at here now. That's what
okay.
I'm doing here.
Well,
and
I am intrigued. I'm not familiar with this person,
it's just,
this character.
It's just very sweet. It's just okay. Very sweet. It's, right. Yeah. And I've gone, of course, for James Norton, owner of the squarest head, this side of Timbuktu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I, you know, like I said, I'm embarrassed a little bit, and but I do fancy him
okay.
quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is Sydney Chambers and me. The facade of the chapel was glowing orange, a combination of the brilliant setting sun just behind its spire and the projected neon lights shooting up to crisscross across the sky. We were in a crowd of people, all of us heading towards the church, tickets clutched. I looked up from our joined hands to catch Sydney's profile. The light was hitting him just right, setting fire to the fine hairs of his eyebrows, bouncing off of his cheekbones, lovingly shading his full upper lip. He looked relaxed, shoulders loose, his other hand in his pocket. I could tell the moment he felt my gaze. His lips curved upwards into his familiar and dear to me smile. "What is it?" he asked, voice as soft as cashmere. I let my mind wander before I answered. We had taken the train down from Cambridge earlier that afternoon, and I'd watched the vicarage get smaller in the rearview mirror with a real sense of glee. He spent so much time worrying about and tending to his flock, I sometimes resented that little house. It could do without him for a night or two. London was where we had met all those years ago, and pulling into King's Cross just over an hour later, I felt bone-deep pleasure suffuse my body. A drink in the hotel bar had turned into two, and then a walk through North London had led us here, just off the busy thoroughfare of Upper Street. A perfect lazy day, the opposite of life in Grantchester, topped off with an evening of live jazz, his favourite, and, in the years we had known each other, now also mine. "Nothing," I replied eventually, leaning into his reassuring bulk. "Just happy to be here, with you." He gently bumped me back. "Happy to be here with you too," he said.
Aww. It's so sweet.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, don't sound like that.
That's how you said it. It's so sweet. And I was responding in kind. Thanks.
Oh, my God. Okay. I feel bad.
No, don't feel bad. Lean in.
Okay. Okay, so my drabble is about the high priest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to read it. I'm just going to go.
Okay.
The priest sits opposite me now, his bouncing leg against the couch his only sign of nerves. He seems to relax the longer we talk, but I don't want him calm with me. I don't want his heartbeat to rest near me, so I ask about the Eucharist. Why are Catholics so squeamish about sex and yet make communion such a sensual, submissive experience? He moves to the edge of his seat, a sweating glass of iced tea in his hands, and asks me what I mean. I pull an exaggerated face, eyes rolling back, tongue halfway out of my mouth, my hands hanging limply. You make people stick their whole tongues out, I reply, and he shakes his head at me, the side of his mouth curling up at my teasing. No one does that, he corrects me, chuckling at my silliness. How do you take communion then, he asks. I stand from my favorite cozy reading chair and walk to him. He watches me, any signs of amusement falling from his face. I take the glass from his hands and use a napkin to dry them. His Adam's apple pushes against his collar as he swallows. I place his right hand on top of his left, palms up, and cup them slightly before I press a thumb very gently in the center of the supplicating gesture. This commitment is a choice we make, that we ask for, I say, looking into eyes that rarely stray from mine. His face is sharper now, more alert. We are making an informed decision, this proof of devotion. I slowly raise our hands closer to his face, to the lips he's parted as he looks up at me. This is my body, I tell him. Take it.
Sure. Why not? Sure. I love it.
Communion.
Listen, that's the hottest part of church, right there.
Man.
Yeah, I feel spent. Somebody get me a cigarette. Like, you know, it's been a taxing episode. It's
wow.
It's a whole lot.
I am not Catholic, but I feel like I should do the sign of the cross.
Might as well. It's not going to hurt.
Just
you know?
Yeah.
That's how you get to heaven.
Extra insurance.
Why not?
So if we still have any listeners out there, thank you for sticking around.
Thank you
for this blasphemy.
I mean, listen, I feel like people are going to be confessing on our behalf this week, and that's fine. We appreciate that. We need all the help we can get. Like, I really am trying to make heaven, so help me out. Help out your local thirst bucket.
Yeah. So, you know, the routine by now, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Friday, we will put up a poll and you can decide which drabble is, you know, going to push you into the afterlife.
Oh my God. Get out. I hate you so much. I hate you so much. Why? Why do you do this?
Is it the sweet, tender bulk of Sydney Chambers?
You know what? No one has ever said bulk so fucking dirtily, and I appreciate you. Thanks.
Or is it the hot priest learning a new way of how to take communion?
I didn't know where that's.
I didn't know where it was gonna.
Learning how to take what now? Oh, communion. All right. Cool. Great. Superb. Listen, the choice is yours. Whatever your soul is speaking to, if it's whispering to kind of, you know, hasten to hell, or if it's kind of more of an angel on your shoulder, you know where to go. Go to our Twitter, which is at Thirst Aid Kit. And register your sin. Let's figure out where you're going to land. And yeah, as we say every week, it doesn't really matter who wins. I mean, we enjoy writing these drabbles. We enjoy reading these drabbles. And so we hope that you get a modicum of joy and pleasure also out of that. So there is no winner except, you know, for the person who wins the poll. But anyway.
We are all winners.
There you go.
In this lovely dance of life, I guess. I don't know.
All right. You're in a real... The priest has got you in a real poetic mood. Wow. Thirst Aid Kit is a Slate production produced by Cher Vincent and us, Bim Adewunmi and Nicole Perkins. Our music is by Tanya Morgan.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Thirst Aid Kit, and we're at Bimadu and Tennessee Whiskey Woman. That's TN Whiskey with an E, Woman. Plus, we're on Tumblr. Shout out to the OG Thirst Buckets over there once again. And that is thirstaidkitpodcast.tumblr.com. You can send us questions over there and we'll try our best to answer them.
If you live tweet your listen, please use the hashtag TACPOD, that's TAKPOD, and you are welcome to email us about how much you love us and all your thirst-induced injuries and, you know, wounds. Also, please, please send us your drabbles. We have missed reading what thirsty things you have come up with, and especially after this week, we want to know which priest is particularly lighting the fire of, you know, hell in you. So the only thing we ask is that you keep it short, because, you know, we can go over because it's our podcast, but you can't. So if we like what we read, we might read yours out on the show. Please include your pronouns so that we can identify you correctly, and send them to firstaidkit@slate.com.
Thank you so much to everyone who came out to our thirsty movie night earlier this week. We hope Bodie and Johnny gave you everything your thirsty hearts and your redacted desired. Thank you to our lovely partners at the IFC Center. We intend to keep having these screenings, so keep an ear out for all future events.
Every single week, we appreciate your ears, and we want more people to enjoy the benefit of our weekly fellowship of thirst. So please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and also head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review and a star rating. We think 5 stars is about correct, so please do that for us. Thank you.
And we're still thrilled to be back. And guess what? We are not going anywhere. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay thirsty. Amen.
Oh, God.
When I see it, I'm just like, this is how he would look when you put a boob in his mouth.
Oh my God.
I know that he is a man of the cloth, but the body.
Do you know?
The body is a gift from God.
Oh my God.
And I think that he knows how to praise the body.
All right, you know what? I'm going to stop you right there because you are doing a lot.
You know,
and I don't necessarily disagree, but I'm also trying to get to heaven.